Okay, welcome back, everybody, for another edition of Handful of Hope. My name is Jesse Brisnan, and today we have Michelle with us today, who is a founder and owner of Total Body Health Solutions and the Om Institute. She's also a recovered binge eater and was named a leading weight loss expert by Shape Magazine. She's been featured on Fox, NBC, and the CW, helping women in the battle of binge and overeating, ditch dieting, and finally love their bodies. A veteran weight loss coach for over 10 years, she's a PhD student in health psychology and has three published books. The most recent title, Have Your Cake and Be Happy Too. I love that title. And A Joyful Approach to Weight Loss. Michelle, thanks so much for being here and welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is so awesome. And you and I were talking off camera because about the parameters that many people are in under right now, where people are at home and people are scared, anxious, they're getting food, they might be buying food that they are not even aware they're buying, and they might be dealing with stress eating or compulsive eating or all sorts of things. So I'm wondering first if we could talk about emotional overeating, kind of define it first for people so we can have some context to work with, and then we can start to break it down and identify some signs that we could do to recognize it and then work with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question because I think we do sort of use catch-all terms for all of them, and they're not all the same. You know, binge eating disorder is the only one that's clinically diagnosed from the eating disorders. So it's everything's pretty much separate. But the way that I sort of frame it for my clients is we either are eating too much out, like when there's a hunger signal, like I'm hungry and then I eat too much food when I start eating, which would be overeating, or it could potentially be binge eating. And then there's emotional eating, where the hunger cue isn't what initiated it. It's I'm sad, I'm lonely, I'm stressed, I'm scared, or I want to feel pleasure, I want to feel comfort. And so it's coming from an emotional trigger, no hunger, versus the other ones, which comes from a hunger trigger and then everything thereafter.
That's a really, I think, powerful distinction. And I can imagine now with everybody, not everybody, that's a pretty broad generalization, but with people feeling everybody, all 7 billion of us.
The whole world.
Yeah. With people in these really highly just anxious and fearful states right now, that emotional triggers may be really prevalent right now, right? What would be some telltale emotional triggers that people could identify for themselves, they could be on the lookout for, so they can be vigilant about what they're doing?
So sometimes people are actually cognizant of, I'm feeling X and I want to eat Y. Like sometimes it is that cut and dry. Other times it's not so obvious, and what it shows up as is a lot of sort of permission giving and validating. Like, I've been doing this, so it's okay to do that. Like, I've been, you know, eating really healthy all day, so it's okay to eat ice cream. By the way, I'm not saying it's not okay. I don't think there is any judgment on what anybody eats, but it's sort of in your own head, you're having to give an excuse to eat is when usually it's coming from one of those other triggers, versus it's just like, I want freaking ice cream, so I want to eat some ice cream, like no big deal. But when you find yourself having to like kind of like bargain and give it reasons and validating why you want to eat it or why you should eat it or shouldn't eat it, is usually when we're getting into that other territory.
You know, I want to use myself as an example, if you're okay playing with this, because yeah. Last night I totally caught myself doing, so Trader Joe's peanut butter pretzels, right?
So good.
So good. I fully have them around sometimes as a treat. And yesterday I had, and I'm really disciplined with it. You know, like I'll have kind of my allotment with them or whatever. And I have them, usually I allow myself to have them once a week or once every month or something as a treat. But I fully had the dialogue going. So I had a moment of feeling really anxious about stuff. You know, I focused on some imagined worst case scenario in my head that was inspired by, you know, a couple other things that were happening. And I heard this voice in my head literally say, oh, you know, you've been really good about not having too many Trader Joe's pretzels. You should have a few more. And so I had a few more. And then I heard this other voice pop up and say, well, you've already had a few more. Why don't you have a few more? And then another voice came up and said, you know what? You deserve to just relax for a little bit. You've been burning the candle at both ends and whatnot. And you know how tasty they are. And you never do this. So why not have a few more? And before I knew it, a 1500 calorie bag was probably reduced by half. And so I'm wondering, like, that psychology, that play out going on, right? So that's happening in real time. I'm fully aware of having that dialogue, fully aware of what I'm doing. What are some strategies I could have used to maybe stop that or disrupt that, or maybe what's the term I'm looking for? Kind of hopefully snap myself out of it and remind myself, you know, hey, maybe this isn't the best path for you to go right now.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult in the moment to solve that problem because without knowing much about the situation, my general thought is that it's coming from some type of deprivation, and 99.9% of all of my clients' eating issues is coming from deprivations. So when we think I can only have it this many times, I shouldn't eat too much, this is bad, because any labeling, any judgment, any good, bad, any healthy, unhealthy creates at least some level of deprivation. And when we have deprivation, we will not make rational, logical decisions around food. So we can't actually logic our way out of it. We can't be like, well, this is not going to feel good, or I'm not that hungry, this, whatever you're trying to tell yourself to, that a normal health person would say to use in that moment to switch yourself from eating it, I would not recommend. I would actually recommend the total opposite. I'd recommend getting that entire bag, pouring it in a big bowl, sitting at the table, taking 5 deep breaths, and just one at a time tasting your pretzels like you've never tasted them before. Enjoying every bite, no guilt, no you. You could tell, I would recommend saying, I can do this every day, all day, if I want to. So it's removing all the deprivation that you possibly can, and being as present and mindful as possible with this food that you absolutely love and supposedly can't get enough of. Although there's always a limit that you will want when you actually are present and remove judgment, deprivation. But it kind of has to happen before, right? Like the dialogue before has to be, these pretzels are neutral, they're not bad, I can have as many as I want.
That's fascinating. And so deprivation, when you're talking deprivation, just to be clear, are you talking deprivation as in the physical act of having it, or is it more of like an emotional deprivation of the comfort that comes from it?
Deprivation can come from actually avoiding the food, not having it. So the feeling of I actually am craving that food, that taste, that specific flavor. Deprivation can come from you're eating it, but you're telling yourself you shouldn't be. Deprivation can come from you only get it this one time, or only once a week, or only this amount. So like deprivation is so easy to create and so common with how we're taught to approach food that we don't even realize that we're doing it, and it's the cause of all of the overeating issues. So it's a really important one to acknowledge, but approaching food with abundance, especially our tempting foods, can be really scary for people, and so that's obviously what I support people with.
That's absolutely fascinating, because as I'm hearing you talk, I'm replaying in my mind my own dialogue leading up to that. And I'm thinking back to probably 3-4 hours before, when I first had this thought come in, like, I feel so alone. I feel like I'm taking on the weight of the world. I feel like I have too much responsibility. I feel like nobody gets like how much I'm trying to give right now. You know, there's all these, I feel. And what I was doing now listening to you talk, I think, is I was almost emotionally removing myself from connection, comfort, like almost isolating myself to an extent. And I'm really curious. So now my question would be, I love the eating it in abundance. I absolutely love that, because I could already feel that if I would have done that instead, I would have probably ate less and I would have been much more focused on savoring it. Because the Trader Joe's pretzels, when I'm really in that pleasure enjoyment thing, I don't just woof them down. I bite off a piece of the salt and like really savor it and like crunch it really. It's like the most decadent thing I allow myself to have, right?
Totally.
So, you know, I'm wondering then if I would have, do you find that if they recognize there's that deprivation feeling before and they maybe do some work on identifying sources of deprivation, is it lack of connection? Is it needing of comfort or something? Might it help them then mitigate some of the, I don't know if this is the right word, but mitigate some of the intensity that might go with food, and then instead it gets them into a more state where you can really put it down and enjoy it like that?
Yeah, it's kind of twofold, right? So going back to where you started, which is what happened 3-4 hours before. So whatever the feeling is, disconnection, isolation, these are the common ones. Inferiority is a big one for my clients. And not that they would ever say that about themselves, but that's what's being described when I hear them talk about why they want to lose weight and those kinds of things. But So what happens is, because you have deprivation around that food, it's sort of like your brain is starving for it, even though your body could care less about peanut butter pretzels, but your brain is really starving for it. And so it's just sort of there, like bubbling at the surface, right? So it's looking for any opportunity to sneak in a reason for it, right? So then when the emotion happens, now, if we didn't have deprivation around a food, then when the emotion comes, we would potentially reach for a strategy that is actually helpful. Because if you're feeling lonely, eating peanut butter pretzels does not help you feel less lonely, especially 5 minutes after you complete eating them. So it's not logical that I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling stressed, I'm feeling lonely, so I'm going to eat. That doesn't make logical sense when we are in a logical, rational state of mind. But deprivation puts us in an illogical, irrational state of mind. And that's why we start to connect these things that make absolutely no sense. And I always joke that your peanut butter pretzels or your whatever food is over there like, wait a second, I didn't even sign up to be for that. Like, I'm just food. Like, I don't know how I got ruled into that thing. Yeah. It's like innocent over there. Like, I'm just here to like put something into your body. I don't know why you think I'm the thing for that, but. No. So we can actually cope better with emotions when we remove the deprivation, because now it's not just sitting there on the top of our mind looking for a reason to show up.
That when you said inferiority, I felt that, because when I look at like how I put, if I were to lump many of those thoughts and feelings I had, so much of it goes into feeling inadequate and inferior in that moment of inadequate and in the sense of wanting so bad to be able to help more. And feeling inadequate and unable to do that, and feeling so much like I needed to just have a better control or tangibleness of something, some skill or whatever it was. And it was a full on, that's absolutely fascinating. I would have never put that language to it before, but when you're saying that, it makes absolute perfect sense. I never looked at it like that before.
Yeah, it's a big one. Inferiority is a big one.
I wanted to switch gears and touch on really quick languaging. You and I were talking offline about, so we're in scenarios right now where parents and kids, you know, families are home sharing four walls for probably a greater length of time than they have in many, many senses and maybe ever. And it's in a time where it's very untraditional and abnormal in the sense of there's all this external stress and anxiety that may be contributing to that, right? And in so doing, you might have parents, people, adults that are maybe eating a little bit more emotionally, overeating, turning to food for comfort. And we were talking about kids observing that, but you were telling me it's not so much the observation of eating as it is the language that's chosen that the adults use around that. That's really can be detrimental for the child. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, thank you, because this is something I'm extremely passionate about, is preventing eating disorders and preventing my future clients from being clients. So I would love to be out of the business of helping people once they have the problem. I would love to be on the preventative side. And the language is key here, because unfortunately, the weight loss industry gives us some information about food and weight and movement that's pretty inaccurate. And what it does is it creates language around food and our body and weight that is what's creating the problem for my clients in the future. And part of that is the labeling and the judgment. So labeling food as good and bad and labeling food as healthy and unhealthy, like I said, creates deprivation. And it also creates, remember, these are children that we're talking about. So they don't separate I'm bad from that was bad. So when they eat something and we say, this is unhealthy, this is bad food, that a lot of times gets processed as I'm bad when I eat it. And it also creates judgment and deprivation around that food. So that makes them want it more. And then when they want it more and they know it's bad, they have to deal with that inner conflict of, wow. I want this thing that's supposedly really bad for you. Why would I want something that's bad for me? There must be something wrong with me. Whatever they define at that point.
And so it's almost like, that's like where the identity starts to form from it, right? It's not, yes. This is bad, that's bad, I'm bad, I'm unhealthy.
Yes.
Right, and so now I'm just doing behaviors that unhealthy people do.
Yep.
Wow. Tips for parents then, you know, parents who may not be familiar with this or may not be aware of it, what are some languaging shifts that they can make with it? Because, and the other thing is too, is many people right now, might be having food in their home that they might normally not have because there is all this panic shopping, right? So the right, they might have stuff they just don't have. They might have stovetop stuffing for food that they never normally have. And in their mind, they might be saying, oh God, I can't believe I have to eat stovetop stuffing or whatever it is. Like, how can they bridge that gap and make that experience safe and okay and nurturing for their kids so it doesn't become something that the child's taking on and harming the child in those moments?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes into the same idea of what do people with really low incomes do, like who do have to buy the lower quality foods, and we put such a judgment on that, like it has to be organic. And I love organic food, but it's the same problem that they have. Like, so what, they're bad now because they can't afford, or, you know, and I don't like that. And so it's that same concept of like, it's food. You have a hunger and you have food to fulfill that hunger. And in an ideal scenario, the food, every item we put in our body is perfect and ideal and high quality, but it's not realistic. So when we judge it and we put labels on it, like good, bad, healthy, unhealthy, what do you do in those moments when that's what's available? And what do you do when you want those foods, right? What if you want an unhealthy food? What if you want hot Cheetos, right? Like, there's no room for that. And so you can't, because it's unhealthy, it's bad. So I believe that food is all just food, right? And some foods we eat for nutrients and minerals and the macronutrients and all of that. And I would say that's, and the percentages don't matter. Let's say that's 70% of the time that the food you eat is for the vitamins, the minerals, those kinds of things. And then 30% of the time, it's just pleasure, nourishment, because you like it, because it reminds you of your childhood. Like, it's just food. It's, who cares? The body can handle it. It really can. So I just remove all of the labels and all of the pressure. And it's just food is food, and it's great. I'm hungry and it's food. Sometimes I run out of time and I eat a cup of noodle for lunch. Is that an ideal lunch? No. Do I feel great afterwards? No. But there's no judgment. There's no big, it's not a big deal to me, because first of all, it's a one-off. Yeah. And even if it wasn't, well, thank God it's food. Yeah. Because I need it. Right. So it's really just being carefree about it and light and like, eh. So it's, you know, talkies. I know that's a big one with kids. I've never even had a talkie, but
what is a talkie?
A talkie, it's like a hot Cheeto thing, I think. But it's like a different shape. It's more like rectangular.
I've never heard of that.
I only know about it because I do eating disorder prevention talks in schools, and that's what the kids always talk about is talkies.
Talkies.
And parents are really big on no talkies. It's like apparently it's a problem. My son's only 4, so we're not there yet. But so if it were me and it was this whole talkie issue, like, are they healthy? Like, if you're labeling it, if you're gonna label it, is this a healthy food? I guess not. But at the same time, what do we know about kids and teens and humans? The more you tell them not to have something, what do they want?
Yeah. Oh, I want that big time.
More of it, right? Yeah. We can't control them. Now, we can control what we buy, obviously, but it's more about just making it like no big deal. And then you have rules, like, that's not what we eat for dinner. That's not what we eat for breakfast. But having it strategically placed within meals. And if they're obsessing over it, then you need to put it pretty much in every meal for a while so that they can get desensitized.
Gotcha. So it's making it fun when it's there, you know, taking the judgment out of it. If it seems to be obsessive, make it more abundant so it's desensitized. Yeah. It's kind of like it's like basic supply and demand in a way, right? If the supply is high, demand goes down. And that's really interesting. That's so helpful. I mean, I just, for myself, but I think looking at it with that frame, gosh, what a beautiful opportunity too for parents who are at home with their kids right now, or any sort of dynamic, whether it's roommates, housemates, all those types of things. People under stressful times, to make it a point to make whatever it is that's going on your table during this time fun.
Yeah. Right? And the food, so here's the thing, here's where I come. I started out as a personal trainer. So it's funny to be on this journey that I'm on now, but like, I don't believe food is fuel, and I don't believe we are what we eat. I think it's so much more expansive than that as humans. Like, I think food is pleasure and comfort and nourishment. And I think it's memories and emotions. I think it's supposed to be, sometimes I think you're supposed to eat purely because it tastes good and not for nutrients. Like, that's the world I live in. So
I love that.
That's what I like to create with my clients and families. And the most important thing, like if I were to give rules, which I'm not a big fan of, it would just be do it mindfully. Because if you're eating mindfully, then if there are foods, because people always ask me, like, what if that you have an allergy or what if that food's not good for your body? If you're eating mindfully with presence, then that information will be revealed from your body specifically. And then you'll know, like me and most dairy don't get along. So I don't tell myself I can't have dairy. I just remind myself what happens when I eat it. And it's so obvious what happens. It's like, it's not worth it, but
yeah.
I don't avoid it. I just ask myself, is it worth it for that feeling? And when you're disconnected from your body and you're not leading with your body, you miss the signals of when your body says, I don't like that, or that's too much. I can only handle this much of that thing. So the mindfulness is probably the only like rule I would give, but honestly, that is fun because you get to enjoy food even more than you already are.
Michelle, three rapid fire questions. In the interest of time, I have so many other questions to ask you, but in the interest of time, I'll start wrapping up. People at home, you know, many of the people who might be watching this, I read something like there's a billion people or more on lockdown, quarantine, self-isolation, shelter in place. I don't know which the correct term is at this point. But people are home and they got more time. They may not be able to work as much. They might have their kids at home, all these types of things. If you could recommend one podcast people listen to during this time, what would that be?
I listen to the John Jay and Rich Morning Show constantly, and it's hilarious, and I find it very entertaining.
That's awesome. A book you'd recommend people read?
All right, now I'm reading Living with the Monks by Jesse Itzler, and it's really, really good.
I have that on my list. I'll have to check that one out. And then movie or documentary you'd recommend people watch?
My favorite documentary is Misrepresentation, like M-I-S-S, Misrepresentation, which is about objectification of women.
Okay, very good. Everyone, Michelle, this is absolutely incredible. And everyone watching this, I encourage you to rewatch this because what Michelle just laid out here is not just strategies that you can use during this time, but these are strategies that you can really use for a foundation building for the rest of your life. Gosh, what a concept to just make food fun and the experience of it and tune out all the BS that we hear around and just get back to having it be a pleasurable and enjoyable experience. And then if you find yourself, you know, going through maybe some of that self-talk that I was going through earlier, looking at how you can maybe address some of those things beforehand. And then also parents, wonderful strategies to be mindful of your kids and just, you know, come back to this and rewatch as much as possible, because this is one of these prime examples that we're all in this together. And imagine the community you can reform within your four walls if your foundation of it, which food is for many of us, is around food being fun. This was absolutely incredible. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing so generously. And Michelle's going to send me all of her links with stuff that she's got going on, everything, so you all can connect with her. And I'll have those available for you to be able to follow along and check out all of her awesome stuff. Thanks so much, Michelle, for being here.
Thank you.
Absolutely.